As Steve spoke, we're going to be looking at courage, bravery, and perseverance, and look to the examples in the Bible, both of examples and illustrations of courage that men of the past have displayed, men of God. We'll also see examples of failure, people who have failed to exhibit the courage they should have, and there's various examples of that. And of course, given all the examples we have in the Bible, we can't cover them all. So we've only selected a few. And we'll hopefully gain some edification from these examples and learn from others' mistakes and the mistakes of others. What is courage? If you look up courage, how it's defined, you'll see that it's defined as, when I looked it up in the dictionary, a mental or moral strength or perseverance, to withstand danger or overcome difficulties or challenges. We'd say that as it's a strength of spirit or your confidence or resolution that guides you through to be able to overcome these difficulties. Those difficulties could be pain, being ostracized from others, humiliation, all sorts of various things, and ultimately, you could be facing death. And we'll see that we need to be courageous and to exhibit bravery is to overcome those obstacles. The fear that is associated with those consequences to fulfill our duty. You also see, similar words besides bravery, perseverance, grit. You also could hear guts. That guy's got a lot of guts. Valor, nerve, stoutness or hardiness. You think of something's hardy, it overcomes. Plants are considered, they're graded according to their hardiness, how they can withstand cold and the temperatures. Some plants are more hardy than others. That same idea in man, the hardiness. And also heart. Bravery is another form of having heart. And you contrast that with the very things you're overcoming, fear, inability or unwillingness to stand, to give up faith. We're all antonyms for bravery, the opposite. Willingness to sacrifice others over self. We see in war and battle, we call people who are brave, who were sacrificed themselves to save someone else. Of course, the opposite of that is sacrificing others to save yourself. That'd be cowardly, craven, and then, of course, just giving up and quitting. It's considered discouragement. And you see that same word, courage, in discouragement, is to lose heart. So we want to, of course, we don't want to lose heart in our endeavors to serve God. We want to be courageous and maintain our heart. Let's look at a few examples of failure to act courageously. And I'm going to ask the audience, these particular examples, what was it specifically? How did they fail to exemplify courage? If you would, turn to 1 Kings, chapter 18. First Kings 18, beginning of verse 21. Then Elisha said to the people, I alone am... Sorry, that was 22. And Elijah came to all the people and said, how long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, follow him. But the people answered him not a word. They were silent. They didn't answer him. Said nothing. Did nothing. Right? We can also look at Proverbs. Well, I guess before we move on, just why do you think that is? What could be going through those people's heads that Elijah asked them this and they didn't want to answer?
Because
You know, we can only assume. But if you look at the very next verse, 22, then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450. And so we see here immediately a disparity. This one man by himself asks him a question, "Are you with me? Or are you with all of them?" And they couldn't answer. Don't want to judge what they were, each individual was thinking, but you know, a lot of times people follow numbers. They follow the group, and the group was not with Elijah. He was the minority. Let's look at also Proverbs.
Michael?
Yes, sir. Jezebel was a follower of Baal, and those were her prophets. And yeah, so that was authority in the kingdom was with Baal instead of God. And so there's consequences for defying the authority of men. But that shouldn't have stopped them. But also, and we know the outcome didn't turn out well for the Baal followers, but the prophets, but let's look at Proverbs 24. Verse 11 and 12. Deliver those who are drawn toward death, and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. So we're given advice to help people who are in need of help. In verse 12, if you say, "Surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds?" And so does it happen that people don't render help to those who need it? You know, this is just like we were just talking about. No one's saying anything. Yeah, it happens, right?
This American put his life in jeopardy helping that robber on the side of the road. What's the guarantee that they're not going to come back and assault him?
Yes. You never know the particular circumstances, but yeah, if someone's being dragged to death, you're going to jump in and save that person? The people who are after him may come after you. You may join them. You may suffer the same fate. There are going to be all sorts of other consequences. But you have this, in verse 12, you have this, I guess, not edict, like the word. What happens? Does God see? Does God know? Does God judge the heart? He does. And you fail to offer help because of fear, God will judge you.
Mike, is verse 12 kind of connected to verse 11?
Yes.
Right. Well, you know, they're saying, "See, we did not know this." If that's in reference to verse 11, they were, I guess their lack of courage was to be aware of who was being led to the slaughter, or staggering.
Correct.
So you can kind of bury your head in the sand and say, "Oh, well, I didn't know that, you know, I just try to connect it back to what could happen in anyone in this room." We don't get to know each other and know what each other's struggles are, and when this a brother falls away, we may excuse ourselves and think we didn't know that that brother was stumbling, staggering, and potentially going to lose their soul. And how that's coward of us, how that's, we're not taking the initiative, you know, we're kind of just trying to keep to our own little bubble, and, you know, that reflects our heart if we don't take the stand and go outside of our comfort zone and get to know each other, not just how's your day, but what's going on in your life? Do you have struggles, trials, temptations? How can I help you and pull you back from that? If we aren't doing those things,
if you're not engaging and finding out,
yeah, you're just not getting to know and work and try.
And I'd agree with you, and that's certainly something we should prevent, you know, from being ignorant, from, like you said, hiding yourself. This may not be the case here, though. This, in verse 12, sounds more like an excuse. It's not that they didn't know, it's that they're trying to excuse their lack of action. And God's saying, I know the heart. He knows what was really going through their thoughts. Fear to act, not an actual ignorance of what was going on, which, you know, if you truly are, you know, don't know what's going on, then you can't be held accountable to it. But yeah, your point's well taken. We do need to be engaged such that we're not purposefully refusing to look and refusing to observe, right? And then certainly, as this is the case, not to make excuses either, to be, you know, when you are aware, don't allow the difficulties that could arise prevent you from taking action, because God does know your heart and the decision process that was going through your mind at that time. Steve?
It may not be physical danger. This happens among brothers. They'll see a brother being assassinated in character, but fear to say anything because they don't want to be involved. So that kind of idea, instead of standing up for the person who's been taken to death, stay out of it. It looks like this would apply to that very thing.
Yes. I'm sorry if I said anything physicality, but just general hardship, whatever form it is. Like in that example that Steve gave, you step up and you say something, there's going to be some retort. There's going to be some debate, and it could be difficult for you, especially if it's a person who doesn't like to be involved in the middle of those kind of things. So there's going to be confrontation. You know, may not be... you're endangered physically, but confrontation isn't pleasant. And we all know it happens. Our elders, you know, are good men. They've dealt with confrontation, you know, in this church amongst the members in the past. And it's never easy. But luckily we have good elders who do stand up and take action, the action that needs to be taken. Any other comments? That's right, and like Steve said, it's easier to say nothing, to do nothing, but you do need courage to step up and take on what's could be difficulties, however they present themselves. Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. Second Timothy chapter 4, beginning verse 16. This is Paul writing to Timothy. At my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. And here, of course, you know, you're talking about Paul's defense. He had to stand on trial for his actions. And he's saying, I had to do it alone. No one else stood up with him. May not be that they could actually help him in his trial, but no one was there to give him emotional support, to help strengthen him and edify him, to see him through it. He had to go alone. Not that he was truly alone. He trusted in God. God was with him. But this is the very reason we all join together here and learn together and work together, is that we can edify one another. No one likes feeling alone, even with God's with us. We prefer to have others of like mind to be with us. It definitely helps to have someone with you, to help stand with you, to strengthen you and support you. And we need to be aware of that with each other. In this case, Paul wasn't a loner. He had men who followed him, who traveled with him. He knows all the brethren in the various churches that he helped establish. It wasn't that he was truly there by himself, but those that were with him, in some sense, deserted him. And so we need to take that as a lesson to us as well, not to let that same similar instance, we'd be at fault in that and not assisting one of our brethren. Let's also look at John 12, beginning verse 42. So John 12, verse 42. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him, speaking of Jesus. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. And so, how was their lack of courage illustrated? They didn't want to stand up to the Pharisees. They didn't want to confess what they believed, right? Were they in doubt? Did it say they were doubting? They weren't certain? What did it say? They believed. They believed. But they wouldn't confess him. They wouldn't stand beside him because of fear. Fear of the Pharisees to be put out of the synagogue. So the act of being withdrawn from or ostracized in their community. These rulers were men of some authority, of esteem, and to make this proclamation, this confession of Jesus, they would be put out. And they would lose that esteem of men. They'd lose the esteem of men. So they preferred to have the praise of men over doing what is right. Sally?
Yes, verse 43 explains it pretty well, please.
Yeah, that's where I was talking about. Verse 43, for they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. Thank you, Sally. Ennis? Yeah, that's exactly so. The Pharisees were men of esteem, or were some the rulers of the religious sect at the time, or at least had some authority. And so they were peers to these other rulers. But, making this confession would put them in jeopardy amongst the majority class. Yeah, their pride, that pride of their position in their society, that they'd lose that.
Well, less than the flesh, too. They were probably benefiting from being part of the, Pharisees in the synagogue, whether it be, through some handout by, being a part of the, priesthood, or Pharisees, that worked, but also just knowing what would be on the opposite of that. Being excommunicated, you're not going to be a recipient of, That's what all, you know, our New Testament examples of men who were living righteously were trying to do. Christ, the best example, died on the cross for that cause.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you. There's definitely, we all feel amongst peer pressure and amongst have that desire to blend in, knowing that blending in makes things easier, to not stand out. But yet that's the temptation when it comes to serving God. We need to be serving God instead of trying to blend in. Yes, so here's your question. That's right. I was going to move on to John chapter 18. Anyone else has another comment? This goes along with what Josh was saying about that we're trying to blend in. You look at John 18, beginning in verse 17. After Jesus was taken to the council, then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. And we see Peter's lack of courage to, when confronted, to speak the truth that he was a disciple of Christ. We also see this, you know, this desire, what he was trying to do. He wanted to be near Jesus, but not too close. And then he was trying to blend in with these officers, to join in with the crowd. Because in the next few verses, through 22, you see what's happening to Jesus. In verse 19, then the high priest asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. And Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world and always taught in the synagogues and in a temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me and what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" So at this very time, Jesus is being persecuted. His disciples have fled. Peter's nearby, but he's not standing up to defend Jesus. He's trying to blend in with the crowd, with those who are around, who are involved in this, in mocking and assaulting our Christ and Lord. So again, you see the fear, the desire to blend in, to not bring trouble on himself. If he stood up and said, "Yes, I know exactly what he said," and he said all these things, he would probably be joining Jesus in these tribulations. Yes, sir.
Simon Peter was following Jesus, so was the other disciple, John,
Yep. Peter's in this case, you've already seen he denied Jesus, denied that connection with him. But he's suffering a moment of weakness, which Jesus predicted beforehand. Let's also turn to continue on in this chapter in verse 25. Yeah, 25 through 27. Now Simon Peter stood and warned himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again. How is he exemplifying his lack of courage here? Yeah, exactly so. This period of blending in is over, right? Someone's like, "I saw you. I saw you." What do you do? "Oh, I'm outed." He denies it. "Nope, I'm distancing myself from Jesus. I'm denying what you're saying, and I'm denying being involved with him." Or... Yes, it is. Yep. We have another example of this same thing. These past examples, those first ones that I meant to say, that were all about lack of action, right? In Kings, no one said anything. No one stood up and said anything for Paul. Peter didn't say anything at the beginning. He was hiding out, trying to blend in. Here we have examples of flat denial to out of fear instead of standing up and being courageous to help. You also see in John chapter 9, previous in the Lord's ministry. So in John chapter 9, beginning of verse 18, about the blind man. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked him, saying, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents answered them and said, "We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him. He will speak for himself." What were they doing?
Shifting focus and attention, they were scared. So, he's a grown man, he can speak for himself, because they were scared of what the Jews would do. Now, converse to that, the blind man turns around and just puts it on them. And they're saying he's a disciple of Christ, but he's turned around and saying, "Well, you know, did God listen to the sinners? Have you ever seen a man who's healed a blind man before? Does that mean I'm a sinner?" God doesn't listen to sinners. He's been putting it back on them. You know, you've never seen a man perform a miracle like this. Willing to stand up in the face of the Jews' scrutiny, their criticism, and part of what we've been discussing here tonight, you know, the idea of having courage brings with it the idea of accepting the consequences that come with it. Because we can have courage, but let's understand the ramification of that. That may mean going against the flow. That may mean going against the majority. That may mean pushing back and therefore repercussions, whether it be physical, whether it be, you know, job-related material, you know, that sort of stuff. Granted, instead of suffering, you know, in this situation, and they could be persecuted, but you stand up for and have courage in those things because then the great reward comes.
Yeah. And see, yeah, you're right here. They were shifting responsibility from them to give an answer to someone else to give an answer. Or, you know, professing an ignorance. We don't know who did it. Ask him. I mean, they already knew their son was healed. I would have thought the first thing they would ask is, "Whoa, you see, how'd this happen and who did it?" It's not a matter of they don't know. It's a matter of they're excusing themselves, and because, and the reason in verse 22, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, they would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." They didn't want to answer, fearing the consequences, but doesn't mean they didn't know the answer. Feel like they knew the answer. But they were scared. They didn't show the courage they had and give them a straightforward answer, knowing, speaking the truth. Instead, go talk to somebody else. We're no comment. But in contrast to that, you turn over to verse 24. Of course, you know, the Pharisees confronted the parents, then they go to the blind man. So they again called the blind man who was blind. He's already told him everything, but they called him again. And he said to him, "Give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered and said, "Whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." Then they said to him again, "What did he do to you, and how did he open your eyes?" And he answered them, "I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses, and as for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." And the man answered and said, "Why, this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." This man has faith. He didn't know who Jesus was. He didn't know anything about him. He met him, and Jesus healed him. And he's like, "Well, here's the evidence. He healed me, and this is unheard of. He has power. God is on his side. What are y'all doing against him?" So he's proclaiming a faith, not even knowing who Jesus fully is, just seeing the evidence that's presented to him, presented by him, or the evidence, what's occurred. Has given, you know, using his reasoning and faculties, he understands what's going on. Ennis? Yeah, they know, by his witness, they know what happened, and they refuse to believe. He sees, he knows what happens, and he's willing to believe. And we know that, and he, knowing the Pharisees were asking this, were, you know, they're interrogating about these events, probably knew something was coming, and it resulted, ended in him being removed from the synagogue, that they've ostracized him. But he finds Jesus finds him, and talks to him again. But he was courageous enough to speak the truth, knowing that these guys didn't want to hear it. You can, you know, sometimes you're talking to people, you know where they stand just based on the questions they're asking, and you know that if I tell them the truth is not what they want to hear. They want to hear something else, and you have to make that decision to speak the truth or not. Let's also look at Galatians chapter 2. Yes, sir. Oh, sorry, I didn't see him. Craig?
Sometimes, like you mentioned, it's hard to decide when you want to bring him to another point of faith, and when he did, he worked with him. So we can look at this as an example that if we have courage and we stand, that we're not standing alone, Jesus knows, and if we're truly seeking to follow him, then he will see to it that we can find what we need, you know, to keep going on, that he won't leave us alone.
Right. He returned to him to build his, continue to build his faith. I was going to say something to Craig, but I forgot what it was now. So it's all right. I was going to say, because we can move on, we're going to be not going to make it through this lesson. So given that, I was going to read Galatians chapter 2. I think that's where I was turning. Yeah. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11. So 11 through 14. Now when Peter had come to Antioch, and I withstood him to his face, Paul speaking, because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, if you being a Jew live in the manner of Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews? So how was Peter, again, failing to show proper courage? Yes, we know the history of Jews, that they didn't associate with Gentiles. They remained entirely separate. We know that Peter being apostle, that he did come to a fuller understanding of the truth, that Gentiles were now partakers of salvation with the Jews. And so he was with them. They converted Gentiles to Christianity. However, when certain, didn't name who these men are, but certain men of the circumcision, they were Jewish, came amongst him, he changed his behavior, and he stopped associating with the Gentiles to associate only with the Jews, and he led others astray in this behavior, and Paul confronted him about it and said, hey, this is not right. You're living like they are, but then you're masking it and trying to put on a different face for these other people so that not to be ostracized, not to be cause whatever conflict there was going to be with these men, knowing that they didn't like it, he went with the easier route and stopped associating with Christian Gentiles, Gentile Christians. So I answered the question there for you. Josh answered it, sorry, and I expanded on it. And I stop and I look at those examples of failure, and a lot of times when I'm reading the Bible, I think about that. What would I do if I was in that position? How would I fare? Any better? Any worse? And, a lot of times we don't know. And I'm not going to answer that. Honestly, you see how these situations, it's all hindsight, right? You see everything, the events that led up to it. You see the events that lead after it. We know what's going to happen, and we say, we would have done better. But, of course, these men are living their lives at that time just as we are now. These situations arise without anticipation. Peter certainly didn't expect to have Jesus taken away that night and taken to the court, and those things were going to happen. They probably put in the last thing that was on their minds, because they knew he was the Christ, that he was going to have a kingdom, and this didn't fit in with that, and they were thrown off. So they find themselves in a moment of weakness. That can happen to us. That can happen to us in our lives. However, we do have that benefit. We see by Peter that he made mistakes, but he overcame them later. His faith grew and he served. And so we also have that reminder that our mistakes are not permanent. They're not, bring about damnation at that particular moment, we have a merciful Lord who will forgive us of the mistakes we made. We can certainly learn from those mistakes and look at the scriptures and learn from these men's mistakes as well. Not to judge them over harshly, knowing that this happens, they are men, and they can fall into moments of weakness, fear. They may have just momentarily forgotten the priorities, which are God. And Steve's kind of moving around a bit, so I'm probably out of time. Yes, sir.
One comment.
Yep.
You know, sometimes we think about things from a self-perspective. As to say, we say, oh, I should have done that differently. I should have shown more courage there or whatever. How we behave can also have an influence on somebody else, in Peter's case. And while we may correct ourselves, that doesn't necessarily mean those we influence will be able to recognize they have a change. So we, you know, sometimes we can carry people away from our lack of courage. The opposite is true. Sometimes we can influence people with our courage, people who otherwise would might be less inclined to show nerve, grit, whatever you like to call it. So we can influence either way. While we only have control over ourselves, we're still going to have to recognize that we have some responsibility in case of people getting influenced like that.
Yes, that's certainly the case. We want to learn from these men's mistakes. We have examples of mistakes in the Bible. We also have examples of faith and overcoming. And we were going to get to it, but I guess we're not. So hopefully you read it as well, because there's good examples of men who showed courage in the face of overwhelming obstacles, even death. Joshua, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and others throughout the New Testament. And all of them had the one thing in common that assisted them to show that courage was trusting God, that God was with them, that they can rely on God. He wasn't just a bystander, a witness, watching it play out, but not being involved. That when God was with you, yes, He is watching, but He's there to support you, to strengthen you, to help you, that He can protect you and deliver you. And you know, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were thrown in the fire. It happened. And God delivered them, and they did not die. And that instance of their courage swayed a king to repent of his ways, sort of. Or at least recognize the power of God. So I guess we'll stop there. I've gone a little bit over. And I guess we'll... thank you for the good comments. We dragged on, but I like to hear these good comments and the class participation, and I do appreciate that. Thank you.